Lately, popular music has been taking it on the chin. The recent passing of its top luminaries, Lemmy Kilmister, David Bowie, Prince, Glenn Frey, has given everyone a chance to take a step back and contemplate the fragility of their own lives. Running parallel to these happenings has been the ongoing conversation about the state of rock and roll, with Gene Simmons' recent clickbait declaration that rock is dead and the oncoming drought of headline status bands needed to keep music festivals alive, there is growing concern the industry of music has only a few scant years to live before caving in on itself. When pressed to pinpoint problems, many point the finger at the lack of rock and roll personalities, arguing that we live in a post-post-post-modern world where spontaneity and recklessness have been traded in for cautiousness, self-awareness, and hindsight. Even when a persona is able to rise above and make a mark, they are batted down and ridiculed for being only a facsimile of the genuine article that preceded them. To me, standing on the sidelines as much as in the spotlight, I can see the dangerous territory we as a music nation are treading. Our natural aptitude to sense true talent and sniff out true charisma, I feel, is being numbed, is being lost, amidst a cackle of uninformed opinions on the internet, which is breeding a generation of music fans proudly deficient in music knowledge. Then there are those who bask in yesteryear, who constantly extol the bands, the albums of the past, without even giving a cursory glance to what is happening in front of them in the present. Trust me, these same people will come around once those same bands drift into yesteryear. We all heard about major label bidding wars on bands when record labels used to carry more weight than they do now, eager to sign the next big thing. It would only be triggered by someone in the A&R department with enough gumption and confidence to make that first hefty monetary gesture. And more so today than ever before, we as a collective music nation need to be more like that, to trust our own ears rather than what our neighbor thinks before the first online opinion comes sailing through the door. Resisting every urge I have to settle back and enjoy what I already have, I am constantly trying to find the next band, the next album, that will rock me just as hard as the time I first heard Master of Puppets or Dressed to Kill or My War or 1984. And I am never disappointed, whether it be the new bands that I discover like Vol, Admiral Sir Cloudesley's Shovel, Satan's Satyrs, Mars Red Sky, Alabama Shakes, Liturgy, new albums from favorite bands like the new Melvins album, the new Voivod, or the new Uncle Acid. Whenever a self-appointed tastemaker or industry insider feels the need to post or write about how rock music is on its last legs, I immediately know that person is a total idiot, a top-shelf, ivory tower-thinking know-it-all, know-nothing idiot. If only they would take the time to actually look around and find this music. Then they could replace their rock is dead posts with announcements of these new great bands, and we can all move forward and bring the new crop of bands to the forefront, onto the main stage, as headliners. And these bands and these personalities are always there. One only has to use their eyes and ears to find them. They're easy to spot, too. They stick out like sore thumbs. If I could disclose the name on my ballot for heir apparent to the throne of rock and roll, it would have to be Abbath. Former bassist of Immortal and now solo artist fronting his eponymously named band, in his rightful place, front and center for all to see. Abbath isn't exactly a novice at this. With his legendary black metal band Immortal from Bergen, Norway, Abbath has stormed the stages internationally for over 25 years, and even before this, with his first band, Old Funeral. But now, as a solo artist, Abbath steps alone into the spotlight to claim his rightful place as one of the new kings. With charisma that stretches on for days, it's easy to see why the metal world has rolled out the red carpet for this guy, and armed with his brilliant self-titled debut on Season of Mist, under his arm, there are few, if any, detractors. If anyone wants to argue the claim that music is losing its rock stars, I dare you to look into Abbath's eyes and say it to his face. I know I wouldn't have the balls. When I saw Abbath would be making a stop in Toronto on his world-smashing tour, I put the call out to meet him. Nervous as I was, I had to meet him. I had to have him on my podcast. But knowing what I know and just by what I had observed and heard on records, I had a feeling Abbath at his core was just a rock fan. And this episode proves that tenfold. The world of metal is made up of a lot of different sounding bands and different personality types. A lot of it revels in the darker side of life, which is fine by me, but a lot of it is encased in weighty glumness. What I noticed upon meeting Abbath is the charming humor in which he carries himself on and off the mic. The mark of a great contrarian is the humor that they can so easily wield. If the Morning Star was the first contrarian, why shouldn't metal be immersed by huge personalities with a penchant for jocularity? Meeting Abbath for the first time here, not knowing if we would even get along, I knew there were two items I could bring up that would strike an even chord between the two of us, Kiss and Motorhead. I must say, this episode here doesn't even come close to how thrilling it was to be in front of the man himself, one-on-one. I think one can hear it in my voice. There are times in the episode where his voice appears distant. Well, that was Abbath standing up mid-talk, getting ready for his gig, and sometimes simply gesturing for effect. There are a few people I'd like to thank for making this podcast happen. Enrique from Season of Mist for hooking this up. Thank you very much, Enrique. Stephen Page out on the Abbath crew for making me feel welcome. And Martin Holmes back in Bergen. Thank you, bro, for having my back. Thank you, fellas. This was memorable. I want to say thanks as well to Skullcandy Headphones and Blue Mic Microphones for the support of the podcast. Thanks to Chino Loco's Restaurants, because when I want a fish burrito, I want it stuffed with chow mein noodles. And thank you for taking time to listen to this podcast episode on iTunes or SoundCloud or however you found it. It's free to listen to, free to download, and free to subscribe. So do it today if you haven't already. Okay, the mighty, mighty Abbath is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go on tell for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes tear me in from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down. Danko Jones has a podcast. It's called the Danko Jones podcast. La da 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 la da.
What do Mastodon, Anthrax, Guns N' Roses, Fucked Up, Opeth, Sloan, The Kids in the Hall, Fozzy, Gallows, and Broken Social Scene all have in common? They've all had at least one member guest on the official Danko Jones podcast. Check it out on iTunes and SoundCloud today.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts now!
Abbath, it is an honor and a pleasure, everything that you relate to being exciting to have you on the podcast. Thank you for being on here.
Thank you for having me.
I think the new album that you put out, the self-titled solo release, is incredible. And I got a preview copy of it. And I think I put on Instagram, like, wow, we're not even 2 weeks into 2016, and I think I'm holding the album of the year. So,
you think so?
I don't mean to kiss your ass, because I'm in your lair. So, but it's true. I really think it's a phenomenal record. But I didn't really request this talk with you to talk about your new album. I'm going to say that all, or I've already said that in the intro, but knowing you and following you for the last few years, I am well aware that you are a fan of two bands that I'm a huge fan of, and I thought this could be a great meeting ground, a good starting point, break in the ice, so to speak, to talk about Motorhead and Kiss.
I just look at my corner there in the bus, you know, Lemmy there and see Destroyer there, you know, Jamie... Aussie, you know, it's my corner in the bus.
One,
Talk about Jimmy and Ossie also.
Let's include them. I mean, Kiss is, like I said to you off the record, this podcast moonlights as a Kiss podcast. I've had people come on. Lydia Chris has been on here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. She's a very nice woman, and she sent me an autograph book, you know, to me, you know, Beth Wishes, Lydia Chris.
Totally.
And that was nice. What a great book that is.
There's some pictures in there that I don't think.
I'm not sure Paul Stanley and the rest of the guys is very happy about those pictures, but you know, they are in there, and I mean, come on, fucking hell.
And that brings me, the reason why I wanted to bring up Motorhead and Kiss is because, you know, Motorhead was a band that was very related to metal. I mean, you can't be a metalhead without owning at least one Motorhead album. And the one thing Lemmy always said at every concert was, we're a rock and roll band. And a lot of the times when I see in death metal, especially in black metal and the genres, I think it's more with the newer generation, the newer fans. They are, you know, they cling to it so tightly because they identify with so much. But I think it takes a couple of years for them to take a step back, chill the fuck out, and realize that, hey, there's a heavy dose. There would be no black metal if all these guys playing it weren't rock and rollers.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Pretty much, you know. But I think, you know, with Black Sabbath and Zeppelin, you know, there's something happened there, you know. And also, you know, with Priest, you know, something came out of Birmingham, you know. And I think heavy metal comes from Birmingham.
Kind of got to agree with Priest and Sabbath.
Yeah, Priest and Sabbath. And of course, you know, you can hear, for example, Led Zeppelin's, Led Zeppelin's Kashmir.
Yeah.
That's heavy metal. You can say rock and roll, but on heavy metal, you know, it's heavy and marching. Something about that, you know.
There's an obvious nod to Kiss with the paint that you don on. Knowing that you are a huge Kiss fan makes sense to me. It's the reason why, me being a Kiss fan, I'm attracted to what you're doing immediately. Tell me about your connection with Kiss. How did it start? And obviously, this is how it manifested. But tell me the history of you and Kiss.
Yeah, I discovered Kiss. I was between 5 and 6 years old. And there was these candy bags, you know, which called Stjernepusen or Star Bag, you know. And then there was all kinds of different candies, but also every time there was these packs with cards. Sometimes it would be football players or some Abba or John English or, you know. And then Kiss, you know. And, you know, back then, you know, we read comics, you know, and it was like looking at, like, these superheroes. But they have instruments, and they are for real, you know. So, but by then I had only listened to, you know, Elvis, you know, and Jerry Lee Lewis, and you know, my parents had this collection of rock and roll from back then, and I remember the first song I ever heard, as I can remember, was Blueberry Hill with Fats Domino. That's the first song I can remember hearing, you know, when it comes to rock and roll.
Right.
But then in 78, 79, we moved to, from where I lived, it's like 4 hours drive from Bergen. We moved to Bergen, and then I met with you know, new classmates and stuff, you know, and a couple of those guys, they already had Kiss albums, so. Must have been like 78, 79, the first time I heard Kiss. So I was collecting these cards for a year or something at least, you know, before I heard them. So remember, back then there was only one TV channel also, and there was this music program every Friday, you know, called Zigzag. And that was the first time I saw this clip of Kiss, you know.
That was a clip
from the Alive 2 commercial, you know, okay. the one with Gene Simmons when he sings "Rockin' the USA," you know, and he'd breathe fire and lift. And I was, I mean, from there on, I was, I knew what I wanted to be in life, what I wanted to do.
When I see you play, there's, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's like huge, I can see the Lemmy influence, I can hear the Lemmy influence,
also,
I could hear the Gene Simmons, I could feel the Gene Simmons in you. Am I wrong?
No, of course not. Both of them are, both Lemmy and Gene Simmons are, you know, great heroes of mine. You know, heard Motorhead first time when we moved to Bergen, and my friend, his father had this huge collection. I heard records, albums, and the first time I heard Motorhead, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and also Sex Pistols and several of those bands. I heard this at the same time, you know. So everything, you just, you know, imagine like an 8 year old coming to Bergen and get all that. I mean, it was, it was the ultimate legal high. You know what I mean? Yeah. So damn exciting, you know. And it's been an exciting journey ever since, you know.
Now, have you, going back to Kiss, so you discovered them around Alive 2, Dynasty, that kind of transitional era, 78 to 79. Now, did you stay with them through the 80s when they took off the makeup?
Yeah, up until Asylum. But after Asylum, I think Asylum has several good. I really like Love's a Deadly Weapon. You know, so awesome. Even, I know, Animalize also, but Creature of the Night, so underrated, probably my favorite album of all times, you know. Together with Overkill, you know, I mean, what a different, you know, they differ so much from each other, but it's part of me, you know.
Yeah. I kind of think that Creatures of the Night was like
the last...
Was
so heavy. It was, that, for, to me, pretty much, that's the first really, really heavy metal album. You know.
Interesting.
Oh yeah, Christmas Night, so underrated. It was back at that point. You know, the people, most people were. You know, they like Paul Stanley said. You know, it's probably one of their best albums. But so many people, but most people are actually listening with their eyes. You know, and then Lick It Up came out.
Now, what'd you think of that? Because I kind of think
Lick It Up is fantastic.
A B to Creatures.
Very yeah, but. Can't beat Creatures, you know, and the magic of Creatures, but they put on the makeup and they become more interesting because there was this happening. Oh, Kiss without makeup, ooh. And that sold like double platinum, you know. Creatures of the Night sold only, you know, barely gold.
Yeah.
So you see, it's very few people are getting this, you know, and what this means to us, you know, the theatrical, the characters, you know, you want to be, you know, your alter ego, you know. You know, the larger in life. I mean, who doesn't want to fucking be that? You know, it's fucking awesome. You know, and I mean, maybe I'm still a fucking 10-year-old in my head. You know, I have all this experience, but I'm, you know, my tour manager. We have, tomorrow we have a day off, and my tour manager. We're going to New York. My tour manager. He said that yesterday. He said that Fraley is playing in town. You know, at the BB Kingdom, and I was fucking jumping like a baby. You know. Like, yay! Yeah, haven't seen him on the Space Invader tour, which is fantastic, by the way. New Israeli album, yeah. So, yeah. And you can see, you know, I still have, like, to have these posters and my heroes around me, you know what I mean? That's me.
What I kind of think that Creatures of the Night was the last dark Kiss album.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's a masterpiece. It's the album. I mean, you know, this cliche. If you end up on a desert island, you know, which album, one album, would you want to have bring with you? You know, for the rest of your existence. To me, it has to be Creatures of the Night. That's the nuclear of heavy metal. Creatures of the Night,
tempered with songwriting from Bryan Adams.
Huh?
Bryan Adams wrote War Machine.
Yeah, War Machine, I know, yeah.
The same guy who wrote...
Yeah, what the fuck? Yeah, you know, you have several plays on the album. You know, Bob Kulick is in there. And So, even on Exciter, the first song on Lick It All album, it's not Winston Cassano, it's not Winnie Winston who plays. It's this other guy who also played some leads on the Grease of the Night. So they have some different. It was also a different producer. It's Michael T. Jackson on. Not Michael Jackson, on Lick It Up, but I remember this producer who did Grease of the Night. There was this long interview with him on YouTube I saw a long time ago, and they talked about the process of it. It was just amazing. What the fuck, you know? And the drums, I mean, in history, I have never heard ever since mightier, more powerful drums than on Grease of the Night. I mean, it's just fucking hell. The drums make that album.
Yeah. And that's.
And of course, Eric Carr. Rest in peace. He was one of the greatest. Yeah.
And that's why I think a lot of the bitterness that came with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction and the fact that Eric Carr was not included in the inductee ceremony.
What the fuck? What's the matter with those guys? Huh?
I don't get it.
That corporation there, you know, I don't get it. You know, this Hall of Fame bullshit. What the fuck? Fuck that. Yeah.
I was actually disappointed when I heard that Kiss was getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and had accepted it after years of really just like slighting the whole ceremony. And I thought that Kiss getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and accepting it, accepting their conditions. I thought it was a poor move on their part. I think it would have been better if Kiss was outstanding. They were out of the whole. It would have made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame useless to a lot of people's eyes if Kiss wasn't included. And yeah, I didn't like how they bent.
They weren't included for years. I mean, it's ridiculous, that whole fucking thing. And there they were. Standing there, you know, the four of them, but Kiss is not only about those four guys, original guys. No. It's not.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
But,
also, as you said, Eric Carr.
So you basically mean, like, I mean, Kiss, I mean, the entity of Kiss is bigger than the four members.
I mean, everybody who's been in Kiss and who's alive should have been there, and they should have. Because Kiss goes over 40 years, you know, and the original Kiss lasted barely 10, you know. So it's more than just those
10 years.
Yeah.
I would like to ask, when you first donned on the paint, was the feeling of, you know, this kind of the closest thing you can get to as a fan of Kiss, doing this, getting on stage with your version, with your character, et cetera, et cetera? Did that go through your mind? Because for me, as a Kiss fan, I see what you do, and I just think that I didn't even have to hear about you being a Kiss fan to know that he's loving doing this because it stems from Kiss. Am I right?
Yeah, I remember last gig we did yesterday was this club in Cleveland. And remember we played there in 2003 also with Rob Halford, with Immortal and Rob Halford. And but I was told yesterday that Kiss played there on their 74th tour, first album, first tour. Also the 75 tour. And the Agora?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I remember standing there yesterday playing, and I feel so far it's one of the best shows we've done. And I felt, I don't know, some energy. I felt something, you know, just knowing what kind of stage I was staying on, you know. You got these goosebumps, you know, and you had a good sound and everything worked, you know, and you're just like, yeah.
Did you ever join the army?
Hmm?
Were you ever part of the Kiss Army, like, officially?
Yeah, back in the day I were, yeah, yeah. Not now, but I was back in the Swedish Kiss Army, yeah.
Because there was no Norwegian.
I don't believe there was a Norwegian Kiss army back then, in 82, 83.
Now, my next question would have to be, have you met any of the members?
I barely met Gene at Grasspop. You know, I waved to him and he waved back after they played. But there was all these bodyguards between us, so. But yeah, I have looked into his eyes. Yeah, that was cool.
A friend of mine said that.
Maybe tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow I will meet the Israeli. That would be something.
There's a friend of mine, he told me this story. A friend of his went up to Paul Stanley, and Paul Stanley's to his back, and he started singing the lyrics for All Hell's Breaking Loose. This street hustler comes up to me one day, and he said, and then when Paul Stanley turns around and goes, "Hey man, what be this? Why do I gotta look like that?" And the guy just.
That's cool.
When I heard that, I thought, you know, Paul's cool, man. Like, that's kind of cool for Paul to do, you know?
Yeah, but have you? I haven't read his book, but I have listened to him reading from his book on the YouTube. What do you say? Somebody's.
I've read the book. I didn't hear the audio. Does he go off script or something?
I don't know. I think I just read from his book. Yeah. Fucking Israeli is paranoid, anti-Semite. Same as a greedy, whatever. And Peter Criss has no fucking talent, tone deaf. But we still love each other as brothers and family. I know Paul Stanley is gonna sing on Israeli's next album. I mean, what the fuck?
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, are they planning this? just to make them interesting? You know? I don't know.
Well, there's that one. Did you read Ace's book?
Yeah, No Regrets. Yeah, it's funny as hell. Yeah.
There's this one scene. All the books blend in now, but there was this one part where Ace was leaving the band and Paul took him shopping to try to convince.
Yeah, to try to get it back, yeah.
And I was like, I pictured that in my head, like Paul
Stanley.
Yeah,
they went to this mall and Paul Stanley trying to get him back, you know.
Trying to buy a gym bag while he's trying to.
I think it's hilarious, you know, but Paul Stanley reads from his book, and since the early 70s, and you know, they share the hotel rooms, and Paul Stanley is taking a shower in the hotel room, and suddenly this stench comes into his shower, you know, this shit stench, and he opens the curtains, and there's Israeli taking a shit when he's taking a shower.
I can see how it drove them. I can see how Paul and Gene got driven nuts by it, Ace's
aunt. But at the same time, you know, when they were a band, you know, nobody's perfect. You love each other, but at some point, it's like a love-hate relationship. That's what Kiss is, you know.
Brothers, I mean,
suppose. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can see that, and you have all these Spinal Tap stories. You know, every band has experienced that. And you're, like Lemmy said, you're never really a band before you have been on tour, you know. That's where you learn how to be a band, you know. You can't call yourself a band before you've been on tour, live together, you know, smell the shoulders shit and toe stench and, you know, fist fight a little, and you know what I mean?
Well, you brought him up again. Lemmy, I wanted to talk about Motorhead with you as the other band that is close to your heart, close to my heart. So much so that you obviously a lot of people know the Bombers cover band and everything.
Yeah.
And from what has recently happened with Lemmy's passing, I know lots of people have asked you about Lemmy's passing. Same with me. But I want to hear it from the horse's mouth. How do you feel and your connection with Motorhead?
I met Lemmy 6-7 times. First time was in 1993 at the airport in Copenhagen. And he sat there with me and Demonos, and it was 2 hours to his flight, and we had no money, and he bought us drinks. You know, first time we tried bourbon and Coke. And you know, every time I met him, you know, he just always took his time to write an autograph, you know, say hello, you know, shake your hand and take a picture, you know. I mean, just a great guy. I mean, the best, you know. And he, over the years, you know, he became like a kind of a father figure, you know, like a role model, yeah, but a little more, because he was so fucking damn right about everything, you know, and everything, his lyrics, it's just pure fucking best fucking poetry that you can read.
Very simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Very to the point.
And I would say, you know, Motorhead, I've grown as a Motorhead, I've grown with Motorhead, you know. I've had this Motorhead tribute band together with my mates for in these days for 20 years now, and yeah, it's just the attitude, you know. I mean, Motorhead is kind of the band Kiss couldn't be, you know, and Kiss and Motorhead didn't have. I mean, it's like two different worlds for me coming together and meeting in my head, you know. And
I see what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Simple, over the top,
yeah.
Meeting together. I
guess. Mm. And I was devastated. I was, when your heroes dies, you know, fucking hell. You know, for example, when Eric Carr died, you know, I was devastated. You know, he was also one of my heroes, you know. And Wurzel, you know, even though he didn't play much, and Filthy Animal, I mean, yeah. And now Lemmy, you know. You know, if Gene Simmons died suddenly, you know, that would be very devastating to me, you know. Ace Frehley, my heroes, you know. You want to see them live forever, you know what I mean? And you also become very aware of your own mortality, you know. So
I read a little article on you and about the Lemmy passing of Lemmy, and you mentioned something that I had already mentioned in interviews for myself was I made a mention, and I made sure that when people asked me about Lemmy, I had to say that above everything else, he was a gentleman. And you are the only person I've read who has said the exact same thing, that Lemmy Kilmister was a gentleman above everything. The dangerous image, the scary image, above all else.
Him and also Ronnie James Dio. I met Ronnie James Dio in 2004.
Another guy, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And last week, I visited both their graves, you know. Outside LA. Yeah, I went there. Yeah. On Dio's, it says man on a silver mountain. But he's not actually buried there, but that's his memory. Right across from it, it's there's Lemmy. You know, his urn is in there, but his name is not come up, was not come up yet on this plate in front of it.
I think Caton from Hyrax is in charge of the statue. Going out.
And we went to Rainbow too, had a drink there first, and sat there in his corner, you know, with the machine. And it was special, you know, because I beat the Rainbow two or three times before, and Lemmy was never there when I was there,
right.
And he wasn't there now either. He was, you know what I mean?
The energy.
Yeah. So. When I stood there, I felt totally in total awe, you know. It's like I was standing there between those two, you know, monuments of guys. Remember Dio? He was a little guy, but what a gentleman he was, also, and he had the voice of a king. Yeah.
And from what I remember and from what everyone says, a photographic memory.
Yeah.
He remembered everyone's name and
mm-hmm.
everything about them.
Yeah.
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 Well, we're going to see you in Bergen then, right? Are we going to see each other in Bergen? You coming to the Volbeat show, right? If you're in town, you're going to be there?
Oh, I thought you were talking about this festival. We're going to play a festival with Volbeat.
Oh, no.
This summer.
Okay, I'm sure we will, too.
This festival with a lot of bands, which totally different bands from... We're on a bill with bands that we are not categorized with at all. Yeah.
But that's
it's going to be interesting.
That's what makes it so much fun.
Yeah.
I think it's fun.
Going to be a special audience that night, I guess.
But Abath, thank you for your time and a chance to talk about my favorite bands. It was awesome. I couldn't have asked for how it went down better. I've been looking forward to this.
If you need to talk more about this, you can always give me a call,
Yeah.
Because I love to talk about it.
I can talk about
it's
it
my
for
passion, it's my life,
Absolutely.
It's everything that's me,
Well, we should talk about, do another one, another Kiss. I do Kiss podcasts with Marty Friedman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we just talk about Kiss. So he's one of those guys, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me the time that Kiss asked him to join, possibly. But he wasn't tall enough.
Yeah.
You have to be a certain...
Oh, yeah?
Guy. Yeah.
Marty Friedman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I also heard, in 83, 84, Eddie Van Halen asked to join Kiss.
Yeah.
But Gene
said...
Gene convinced him to continue with...
This podcast moonlights as a Van Halen podcast too.
Yeah.
Are you a Van Halen fan? Because I can go for hours on that band.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Let's do another one.
Fair Warning is one of my favorite albums of all times.
I've done 3 Van Halen themed podcasts. Yeah. I just did a 4th one. We can do another one another day.
I think Diamond Dave, David Lee Roth, he's one of the coolest, best frontmen ever. Well, look at all the people here tonight. This is not a microphone in my pants. I'm just happy to see you, California.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they also doesn't matter. Don't take everything too serious in life. It doesn't matter whether you win or you lose. It's how good you look.
He's the man.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's crazy. Yeah.
Did you hear about his newest single that he uploaded on YouTube? It's called "Ain't No Christmas," and everybody in the Van Halen world was speculating that it was about him unofficially quitting Van Halen for good. And it's like a letter to Eddie Van Halen, if you read the lyrics.
Oh.
First, the management said, it's just poetry, it means nothing, it's just a song. And then DLR said last month, it might be about Eddie. What do you think about that? I think it's over with David and...
those two guys, two of the biggest egos in rock and roll. Right? In the same band, It must have been trouble from get-go, but also great, Same as Kiss, original Kiss, for example. They were all totally, completely different guys.
Yeah.
But together they were magic,
Even
when it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. But even with Paul and Gene.
Even those two guys, Yeah.
Oh, man. This is great.
Yeah.
Abath, this has been amazing. Like, a chance to talk to you about 3 of my favorite bands... Now I know 3 of your favorite bands. This is all I want to do all day long. This is why I do this when I'm not on the road. This is what I want to do. I just want to talk fucking rock with dudes who want to talk about rock. This is what we do. This is what I do on the tour bus in the dressing room.
There's one hell of a microphone you have here. What the fuck? Yeah, it's great.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Like Paul Stanley said, Kiss is not the latest trend, it's alive. And Obot is not the latest trend, Immortal or whatever, it's not the latest trend. We've been doing this for, almost 30 years now. And I feel I'm just getting started. You have to just, believe in yourself and be yourself, Be yourselves.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's where I should.